This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore! Austin 316 says I just ripped your ass. This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
All right, everybody, guys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter. And on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, also the host of the Football Function Podcast, available on all of the platforms, including the one that you're listening to this podcast on. But today we're going to talk about the SmackDown that aired on October 22nd, 2021. It's actually my birthday. It's been kind of weird over the past few weeks hearing basically everybody in like the WWE universe, so to speak, or even like wrestlers and Michael Cole, announcers hype up October 22nd because it's going to be the day that the rosters officially go into effect the day after Crown Jewel. So I thought that was pretty cool. Everybody kind of looking forward to that day. I look forward to this day every single year. So yeah, my 28th birthday today. So I was able to have a good day despite working. You know, nobody wants to work on your birthday, but I mean, you know, it is what it is when you're adult. Sometimes you really don't have a choice, and that was definitely the case with me today. But I got a chance to watch SmackDown after I got off work, and now I'm sitting here getting a chance to talk to you guys. So definitely a birthday well spent, if I do say so myself. So I do want to thank you for listening to this. If you are a first time listener, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I hope that you will enjoy it, and hope that maybe you will stick around. Maybe leave a nice rating in the bottom in the Apple Podcast section. A nice written review, all that stuff goes a long way to helping the podcast, so I can say for Matt as well, will definitely appreciate it. But with all that being said, before I dive into anything that happened on this episode of SmackDown, I kind of have to talk about last week first. Now, some of you may know, as WWE Stu from London, he actually pointed this out to me, and I completely missed it. I don't know what the hell I was thinking last week, guys, but I'm sure you guys all know, last week I said on my SmackDown review that Becky Lynch lost her SmackDown Women's Championship. I don't know why. I thought that match was a title match. I don't know where I thought that I saw that, if it was on Twitter or on TV somewhere. I don't know what the hell I was thinking that made me think it was for the championship. And I thought it was kind of weird how it all, you know, played out afterwards, how it was kind of rushed. I alluded to that on the show and why I thought that it was weird that a moment of that significance didn't get more, you know, of the spotlight. Now it makes sense. The championship didn't switch hands. So, I mean, it makes complete sense why, you know, it was rushed and all that stuff. So, shout out to WWE Stu. And just on that note, I kind of want to tell you, like, if I mess up on something like that, I definitely want you guys to, you know, let me know about it. That's why I include my social media, not just for that reason. Obviously, I want to know you guys' feedback, your opinions, all that stuff. DJ Kuzmo definitely takes advantage of that, and I definitely appreciate his feedback every week on the SmackDown review. And this week it was WWE Stu. He caught a mistake that I made. He was like, hey, I'm not sure what happened there, but I mean, you definitely might want to go back and rewatch that if you think that Becky lost her championship. So I did. I went back and rewatched the end of that match, and I was like, what the hell was I thinking? I did not know. Maybe I was hanging out with Matt Riddle before I watched SmackDown or before I hopped on the podcast to record, and I was feeling a little spacey. I don't know what the deal was, but either way, I was not on my A game, I guess you can say, last week. So that's on me. I definitely want to apologize for that. I know that you guys, you don't want to listen to a podcast where like the person who's preaching doesn't really know what he's talking about. And that's not the case, obviously. Like I broke down the match, how it happened. I just thought that the championship was on the line. That's really where I got confused, because that's a big reason why I wanted to get into like doing podcasts like this, is because as you're listening to podcasts and you become familiar with people. Like me personally, there were some podcasts that I listened to where I was tired of the host say, well, I didn't watch this part of the show. I was doing this or that. I really didn't pay attention to that. And I was like, well, why the hell do you have a podcast if you're not watching the show? Like, why the hell are you going to go and try to spit out like things that happen that you might not have even seen, you know? So, yeah, that's on me for sure, guys. I definitely will try to bring my fastball every time. Sometimes I don't. I will be the first to admit that. That's just part of podcasting. You're going to look back on some episodes and think, man, I really hit that one out of the park. And others are going to look back and think, man, I feel like an absolute stooge. I didn't have my fastball, that recording, whatever you want to, however you want to frame it or look at it. It is what it is. I definitely will have better performances going forward. So shout out to WWE Stu. Shout out to all you guys who listen. And definitely, you know, if I mess up or anything like that, get at me. Let me know. I mean, I have thick skin. You're not going to hurt my feelings or anything like that, I promise. So definitely, I want to hear what you guys have to say about the show. I mean, if you guys think it stinks, let me know. I mean, that's one thing that, like, I'm not sure if Matt would filter that out of the mailbag anyway, just out of, you know, like, not trying to, like, ruffle any feathers or anything like that. I think that type of stuff's interesting. Like, it adds a little bit of, like, juice to, like, certain things, if that makes sense. Like, not saying that anybody needs to get in, like, an argument or anything like that, because obviously this is wrestling, you know, healthy debates, intelligent debates where two people are actually making valid points. That's what I'm talking about here. Like, if you think that there's something that I said that that was completely off, or like, dude, what the hell are you talking about? Like, for instance, like a comparison. Like last week I said Montez Ford kind of reminded me of Randy Orton. If you disagree with that, I would love for you to, you know, get at me on Twitter, on the mailbag, and tell me why. Because I think that's actually, you know, pretty fun whenever, you know, somebody's listening to what you're saying, number one. And then whenever they will, you know, kind of push back and say, hey, I disagree with you and this is why. That's something like on my other podcast, The Football Function, we do all the time as far as like me and my co-hosts and guests that we have on. That's some of the most entertaining parts of the show is whenever two people disagree and they both have valid points and they kind of make their points and they can kind of, you know, sway listeners one way or the other. But, you know, that's really not what I'm trying to do. I know that you guys all have your opinion. You guys are all intelligent wrestling fans. If you're listening to a podcast, then you look beyond just the winners and losers. You know, you're actually focused in on more. You know, you're actually thinking about what's going on. You're analyzing it because you know what makes sense. You know logically how a good wrestling show is supposed to look. So whenever you're kind of force-fed this bad stuff, it's very easy for you to, you know, point it out and, you know, decipher that type of stuff. So anyways, I guess that was one of the most off-topic intros to one of my podcasts that I've really ever had. And I think that should just about get me ready to dive in here to the actual SmackDown review. So let's do just that. And this one started with Roman Reigns coming to the ring. Now, I didn't watch Crown Jewel. I'm just going to go ahead and get that out of the way. I kind of told you guys, or I told you guys last week, just with the way the schedule was, there was no way in hell I was going to be able to watch this. Just given, like, yesterday I had work, had to record another podcast. And then I actually went to a Styx concert, just kind of off a little sidebar there. And then today, obviously being my birthday, I just really didn't have a whole lot of time after work. So I was actually lucky to get this podcast in of itself, you know, watching SmackDown and able to sit here and record. There was no way I was going to get a 4-hour pay-per-view in. There was just absolutely no way I was going to be able to do that during the week. And just from hearing everything, and that's exactly what it was, just extremely long. That's really all I've heard is that this pay-per-view was really drug out. Now, when you look at just like the pure timestamp, 4 hours, that's not necessarily too long of a pay-per-view. I mean, just given what we've been used to in recent memory, we've seen literally 6 to 8 hour pay-per-views. So when I heard it was 4, I was like, okay, well, I mean, that's not too bizarre or like not too far-fetched out of like the realm of possibility in terms of like a realistic length for a pay-per-view, especially one where, I mean, you're traveling, what, like 17 hours one way to get there. The least you could do is put on like a few hour show, I guess, for the wrestlers who travel over there. I mean, if you're going to travel that long, I mean, at least give us a lot of time in the ring and all the people who they brought over there. Obviously, I mean, that the minutes in the matches start to add up whenever you have all that. And that's how you end up getting with a 4 hour show, including all the video packages and all the extra stuff production wise that WWE likes to do. So, I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I did watch a few highlights. I mean, as the show went on, they'd show the video packages. Of course, you see stuff on Twitter. I actually had, because I was at work, I was pretty much being updated by the Discord server. That's one perk and one benefit you get to signing up with Patreon is you're involved in that Discord chat. And that's kind of what I was using because Twitter, all that stuff, that kills my battery whenever I'm at work. I like to listen to podcasts and things like that. So if I'm just sitting there kind of going on social media and looking at apps, my battery's not going to last very long. So I was kind of relying on that Discord server and just looking at the messages as they would pop up on my notifications. I really wouldn't even have to open up the app. I could just kind of see what each person was saying. And they'd say, ooh, Edge won the Hell in a Cell. What the hell is going on here? King Xavier, I guess is what we're calling him now. Xavier won the King of the Ring. Same thing with Zelina Vega. I was just kind of staying up to date like that. So that's one good reason. Now, if you don't like that type of stuff, if you were the type that wanted to wait till you got off work to find out all of the results, you'd want to turn your notifications off. But I really don't care about that type of stuff. I mean, I don't follow WWE or anything like that on Twitter or social media for that reason, because I don't want to have stuff spoiled just anytime I'm just simply trying to look at, you know, Twitter. Now it's kind of hard these days because you follow so many people. You know, I'm not going to mute everybody. I'm not going to mute all the listeners of the show and all the other hosts that I follow just so I can, you know, have the element of surprise. You know, it's not that important to me, because that's one thing that I know. If you're going to wait to watch it, if you're not going to watch it live and use DVR like I do every single week, then you're likely, I mean, you're setting yourself up to have some stuff spoiled. So I guess it's just kind of something that I've accepted at this point. And it's what makes moments like Edge's return and other moments that, you know, you really truly don't expect, the Hardy Boys returning, it's what makes those moments so special, because it kind of takes you back to the days where everything was like that. Any return, any big moment, you didn't know. There was no Twitter. There was no, I mean, the internet was around, but I mean, you weren't finding out real time like that, kind of what was going on. So it would take a day or two unless you knew exactly where to go. I'm sure some people were way more advanced than I was way back then when it came to like internet chat rooms and where you could find like dirt sheets and things like that. But I know it was different. I can confidently say that, and say that I know that the element of surprise was very much real back in the day. And it's kind of gone. But, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, I've already accepted it. It's nothing new. We should all be used to it by now. And some people are good. I mean, it's a very easy fix. I knew right away, ooh, there's a pay-per-view today. People are going to be talking about it. If you don't want to hear about it, turn your notifications off in the Discord server. I didn't do that, and I was actually using that to my benefit, I guess you could say. So shout out to everybody who was keeping me updated. The Crisis, Amanda Jin. I know many others. Sorry, I can't remember off the very top of my head, but the Discord server was definitely exciting and kind of entertaining during the Crown Jewel pay-per-view. But as far as things that happened on SmackDown, like I said, or I was getting into, Roman Reigns started the show, and he kind of questions Paul Heyman a little bit at the very beginning. We don't really hear about it. He kind of just says, hey, I mean, whenever I stuck my hand out, because you guys all know, Roman Reigns will stick his hand out, and Paul Heyman will hand him the microphone every single week, or every time he's cutting one of these promos, like not a backstage promo, but one here in the ring where the spotlight is on him. So he kind of said, you knew what to do whenever I stuck my hand out tonight, but what about last night whenever I stuck my hand out for the Universal Championship? You didn't know, or you just kind of threw it in the ring. You just threw it between me and Brock Lesnar. Why didn't you hand it directly to me? So he does call him out a little bit just to kind of let you know that that is on his mind, but he didn't get too far into anything like that. I don't feel like that storyline was really developed at all. Because all he really does here is he kind of talks about himself, as you would expect. He calls himself the best of the best. And he mentions how he's been carrying WWE for over a year and a half. I mean, no lies detected so far. That's very much true. His heel gimmick has been, without a doubt, the best thing that WWE has going for them. And it really hasn't lost any of its luster. It's still very much must-see TV, in my opinion, in terms of, you know, wrestling programs and things like that. It is one of the, you know, most exciting things that I look forward to every week. So I definitely agreed with what he said when he said that he's been carrying the company. So, you know, nothing wrong yet. And then he starts to list off all of the people that he's quote unquote smashed since WrestleMania. You know, he mentions Daniel Bryan, Edge, Cesaro, Finn Balor, and then he gets to Brock Lesnar. And this is where it kind of surprised me. And Roman Reigns definitely got a pair of balls on him, you know, just willingly calling out Brock Lesnar. And that's what he does. He constantly calls Brock Lesnar out. He tells him to come to the ring. He wants to settle this. And because, well, number one, let me just backtrack a little bit. Brock Lesnar actually tweeted something, or he said something, that whenever I show up to SmackDown, I'm going to beat Roman Reigns senseless. So that's pretty much the whole reason why Roman Reigns wants Brock Lesnar to come out. I mean, he says, I'm not a hard guy to find. If you're going to talk about me on social media, then why don't you come out here and say it to my face? So he does not leave. This was a very long opening segment. It lasted about 30 minutes in total. Not all of it was, you know, just Roman Reigns in the ring or Brock Lesnar, who does eventually come out because Roman Reigns is about to leave. Like, he tells Wichita, you guys have gotten enough of my time. It's time for me to go. And as soon as he's about to leave, that's whenever Brock Lesnar's music hits. And he comes to the ring, and this is what was kind of funny to me, is you guys know in the movie Step Brothers, right? Whenever Dale and Brennan are in one of their little interviews, or they're in their job interview process, and one of the ladies walks out there and calls them back, and they both stand up and they say, we're here to up. And they start walking through the office or wherever they are, and they're like knocking papers out of guys' hands as they're walking by. Just one of those situations, just basically there to raise hell. And that's kind of the vibe that I got from Brock Lesnar, because he comes out to the ring. He goes immediately after Roman Reigns, clotheslines him out of the ring. They kind of start going at it back and forth. Brock's definitely kicking his ass. Like, that's number one. Roman's definitely throwing some punches back, but Brock Lesnar clearly has the momentum here, I guess, if I could use that word. And he's about to F5 him through the announce table until the Usos come out and they hit him. You know, they save Roman Reigns because he's on his shoulders. He's about to go through the table. And they kind of come out, save the day. They protect Roman Reigns from going through the table, but they end up becoming victimized as well. Brock Lesnar doesn't hold back on them. And then a camera guy, he ends up getting it, you know, being in the wrong place at the wrong time, a different official who's in a suit. So you're just, if you're approaching Brock Lesnar right now in this segment, you're going to get your ass kicked. You're going to get thrown across and likely the you-know-what beat out of you, because Adam Pearce finds that out firsthand, because after all this, he comes out to the ring and he says, due to his actions and what you guys just saw transpire here outside the ring, Brock Lesnar is hereby suspended indefinitely. You guys know what that means. It's a way to write Brock Lesnar off of TV, so we won't have to see him for a while. And they kind of have a reason. Well, he's suspended. Remember, he went, you know what, outside the ring. He was throwing around officials, cameramen, a line of WWE superstars kind of just came out to try to calm him down as well. He was knocking them down one by one. So he was basically just unstoppable here, and it ended up costing him his current status in WWE, because now he is suspended, and he doesn't like that, as you would expect. He doesn't take too kindly to Adam Pearce making that announcement, so he goes out there, and he plays dumb a little bit. He says, am I hearing things? Am I going crazy? Did I just hear you say what you said? And he just grabs him by the tie, clearly choking him. You can see the veins popping out on Adam Pearce's head. And he kind of just says, yeah, you're suspended indefinitely. I don't have any choice. You really have backed me into a corner here, literally and figuratively, because he backs him up in the corner of the turnbuckle. And that's whenever he picks him up, gives him an F5. And then the crowd obviously chanting to do it again. So he does just that. He gives him a second F5, and this one actually rips his pants. I'm not sure if any of you guys caught that at home. I know Pat McAfee pointed it out, but I actually noticed it whenever it happened there. I mean, he's lucky that he had everything covered up, because that could have been a very bad wardrobe malfunction, something that nobody would have wanted to see either. So definitely, if you're going to be taking F5s like that, and you know you're going to take F5s like that, you might want to get some pants that aren't so tight around your legs, Adam Pearce. That's just something. I mean, you're on national television, for Christ's sake. So anyways, Adam Pearce Brock's still suspended. This is only going to probably add to his suspension, but he definitely gave the crowd what they wanted, maybe released a little bit of stress. Who doesn't like seeing Adam Pearce take a finisher, whether it's a stunner, an F5, anything like that? I know I enjoy it. Pat McAfee was burying Adam Pearce outside of the ring whenever this was going on, calling him like a big bald doofus. Who is this guy? What's he doing? I mean, it was pretty funny to see. I will say, you guys know I'm very high on Pat, and this was one of his best nights on commentary, in my opinion. But let's see, moving on here in the show. Like I said, this took up about 30 minutes of the show, just real time. Keep in mind, there was a pretty long video package where they kind of highlighted everything that happened during the main event championship match for the Universal Championship at Crown Jewel. So that's kind of what happened at the very beginning of the show. And then this segment started. Roman Reigns obviously waiting out there forever for Brock Lesnar to come out. Once he finally does, that whole situation takes up a little bit of time. And then the Adam Pearce thing, multiple commercial breaks. So, I mean, in real time, this thing took up about 30 minutes of the show. And you guys know what that means. Anytime there's a long segment like that that takes up like a quarter of the entire show, these reviews go by fast, because SmackDown itself starts to fly by segment after segment, because they don't have enough time to dedicate another like huge chunk of time to one segment. And they already have another big one at the very end of the show that they've already highlighted, which is the WWE Women's Championship Exchange. So if you're going to bookend your shows with the Universal Championship and then both Women's Championships, you already know in between that there's not going to be a whole lot of juicy stuff. I mean, they did fill it with a lot of stuff that's noteworthy to talk about, but it all was just so fast. You were just getting one after the other. It was good stuff. I will say this was a good episode of SmackDown. There wasn't a reason for me to complain. I mean, I'm trying to think of things that I didn't like about this show. I mean, other than the white ropes, I kind of wanted to touch on that again. They still have not brought back the blue ropes. I'm definitely going to continue to mention that until they eventually do something, because I know that they will. I don't know why. You have the blue ropes there. It does add something. it would have looked cool seeing Drew McIntyre out there in like a SmackDown ring. It just felt like a regular ring because it's white ropes. That bothers me. You guys probably don't care. Some of you might, but it's just one of those things that it's a random thing that I nitpick about. And just because I take this brand split serious, I want it to be legit. And that just kind of adds to it. So, you know, I'm not going to go any more about that this week. But believe me, next week, if they're white again, I will most likely mention it. But continuing on here, what happens next? We get a little bit of a backstage segment with Sonya Deville, obviously her co-official, I guess, co-general manager. I mean, take your pick what you want to call that position. But that is, or she's clearly in a little bit of a pickle because he's gone. I mean, he gets like helped out of the arena. He has to go get medical attention. So she's having to run the show by herself, which I don't know if she's capable of doing that. She's hardly capable of doing it whenever she has Adam Pearce there helping her. So she clearly has her work cut out for her, and she's approached by the person who she probably really doesn't want to see, and that is Naomi. And Naomi just cuts right to the chase. Look, you screwed me last week. You know I wanted a one-on-one match with you. You added Shayna Baszler. What the hell? Give me this one-on-one match. Sonya just acts like she's had an absolutely terrible day. Like, this was the last person she wanted to see. Obviously, I just mentioned that. And she kind of just says, look, I'm way too busy right now to deal with this. The last thing I want to do is go out there and beat you up again. So get out of here. And Naomi does just that. But it's just funny how Naomi, or Sonya, that is, she continues to talk to Naomi like this. I mean, in real life, Naomi would probably mop the floor with Sonya Deville. And this is kind of what I think. But I mean, it's just funny, this dynamic that they have. It is something that I look forward to every week. I will say the women's division on SmackDown is kind of it's questionable right now, to say the least. It has a babyface problem. We really don't know what we're going to expect at the very top. Now we kind of do after what happens at the end of the show, and we'll certainly get there. But having this little mid-card feud going on with Sonya and Naomi, I just feel like it adds something. You really don't, I guess, appreciate it until you're in a rut, I guess you can say, or like you hit a bump in the road with this women's division, because that does happen all the time. Well, I mean, look at the women's tag team division right now. There isn't one. And then there's kind of like multiple. I mean, it's hard to really judge it right now because both rosters are so new. But here in a few weeks, if we're looking and we're looking around on SmackDown saying, all right, who's the top babyface over here? I mean, it looks like it might be Sasha right now, just given what happened at the end of the show. But that's still going to be something that's going to be tough to get used to. She's clearly better as a heel, in my opinion. She never makes like an official turn. Anytime she goes from heel to babyface, it's kind of just like by default. And she kind of just, with what she says and how she acts, you're kind of just supposed to assume, okay, well, she's acting like a heel, so she must be one. Well, she's acting like a babyface, so I mean, did she turn and I just didn't notice? That's kind of how Sasha does things. She doesn't really make things like a really big moment whenever she makes a turn. So I guess, right now, we're just going to accept that she's a babyface. I don't know. I could be wrong again whenever it comes to this women's picture. Somebody could definitely let me know if I missed something and Sasha is still acting like a heel or something. But as far as I knew, she's acting like a babyface. But we will get to that point a little bit later in the show. I kind of just wanted to talk about the women for a little bit, given that we had this little segment with Naomi and Sonya Deville. But another person who talks to Sonya is Drew McIntyre. He kind of tells her right now, look, I am about to go to the ring and issue an open challenge. I guess I should be getting your permission, but I really don't care if you allow me to or not. That's what's going to happen. So Sonya kind of gets put in her place right there by Drew McIntyre on his first night on SmackDown. I did think that was funny, but he goes out there. He says he does exactly what he said he was going to do. He has an open challenge, and this one is accepted by Sami Zayn, who comes out and he debuts new music. I'm not sure if anybody, you know, is into that type of stuff. I clearly think it's noteworthy whenever somebody changes their music, especially Sammy, because he's had the exact same music for a very long time. So whenever I heard it kind of change a little bit as it was playing, I was like, oh, dang, Sami Zayn changed his music. Hell yeah, that's what I like to see. But anyways, he comes out and he says that he is the longest tenured member on the SmackDown roster. I didn't know that, but it does make sense. So because of that, he says that he's the gatekeeper around here and that Drew McIntyre basically is going to have to beat him. And he has, you know, pretty funny. I think Sami Zayn is one of the people who, he's one of the best unscripted promos in the entire company. Like whenever you just tell him to go, you give him bullet points and you let him just be a heel and kind of just like antagonize people. He's one of the best in the business, and I'm glad that he is on SmackDown for sure. We all knew that they weren't going to have Drew McIntyre lose this match. I did think it was maybe going to be a little bit more competitive. Sammy didn't get squashed, but it wasn't long at all. It's a relatively short match. Ends with a claymore like you would expect. So Drew McIntyre 1-0 here on SmackDown. I do think he's going to have a very successful run here. And it's only a matter of time before he and Roman Reigns are locking horns. Let's see. Let's move on to something else that happened. The coronation of King Xavier. This was weird. It's not like something unheard of. Like, we've never seen something like this. But it's just, it's almost like the King of the Ring went out the window as soon as Xavier and Kofi went out to the ring, and they kind of started doing what they were doing. They kind of just, individually, they introduced the scepter. They said how that was meaningful. They did the exact same thing to the crown and his cloak. You know, they were definitely trying to make it feel important, I guess. But at the same time, they were like joking around, running around the ring and all that stuff, and him saying that he's going to, you know, like, give opportunities as the king. Like, opportunities to what? Like, if you lose a match to somebody who you quote-unquote give an opportunity to, does that mean they're the new king? Like, I don't really understand. He was kind of saying it like he was a champion. You know, anytime somebody wins a championship, they come out and they say they're going to give opportunities. I was really getting that vibe from Xavier. It did not feel like a heel at all, or like the start of a heel turn or anything like that. It literally just felt like, we're going to add this King of the Ring gimmick to the New Day and kind of mix it together and see how long we could take this thing. That's exactly the vibe I got from it. Nothing really that I wanted to take away. I actually was kind of disappointed. I wanted to see what Xavier was going to do with this, but he really didn't do anything. So I guess that's really all I could say there. One little thing I wrote down here is they gave him the You Deserve It chant. And I'm not saying that Xavier specifically doesn't deserve that chant, but if I never had to hear another You Deserve It chant in my life, I'd be perfectly fine. That chant has been overdone and overused so many times. It's so annoying. It's like the This Is Awesome. I mean, there's so many chants that, like, I know that after a year without fans, we're kind of all still like in the honeymoon stage where, oh my gosh, I love seeing fans at the live events, and we're no longer performing in the Thunderdome and things like that. And I love fans. I will say that. I love the environment, the atmosphere, all that stuff. But I will say live or the crowds before the pandemic started were really starting to like rub me the wrong way. And it's just like those forced chants. They don't really do it for me. It's very annoying. I feel like there's a lot of times where the crowd is trying too hard to make it about them. Like any match that goes on. I noticed it a lot. Maybe it was just kind of like a bias because I was a Roman Reigns supporter whenever he was a babyface. I know that people, I mean, that's like saying that you're a Roman Reigns supporter during his babyface role is like saying you like candy corn. You know, I mean, and I love both. I love candy corn and I love the Roman Reigns babyface turn or babyface character. But people, you know, absolutely crap on those all the time. I don't understand why people hate candy corn so much. It's freaking tasty. I hate real corn. And that's one thing that people make fun of me all the time. Real corn, tomatoes, things like that. And I know Michael Gross is probably hearing this thinking, what the hell? But yeah, I don't know what it is. Corn has just never really been my thing, but I love candy corn. And I'm not going to get too much more off topic with all that. But basically, before I, you know, completely got off topic with the corn stuff, I was talking about the crowd and how they were really getting on my nerves. And that might have something to do with it because they were really annoying. They were trying to be too involved when the Roman Reigns stuff was going on back then, at least in my opinion. And there certainly are other times when they're just chanting to chant. And I know you paid money to go to the event. I mean, be loud. Support the guys who you want, but kind of just collectively doing chants. And I'm not trying to, you know, be like a negative Ned or say, hey, don't chant. Don't do the You Deserve It chant. Just me personally, there was a lot of times where it was overused, used for people who, I mean, really, I mean, you make the chant mean less. I remember the first time I ever heard it, I think it might have been Sasha Banks whenever she won a women's championship on the main roster. I don't really know for sure the first time I heard it, and it actually felt cool. Oh, damn, you know, that's badass. The crowd is embracing her. But since then, yeah, I mean, the chants as a whole, not all of them, but there are some that just definitely, you know, should go away, in my opinion. You know, I'd rather hear the crowd chant what for an entire show than hear You Deserve It or something like that. I mean, just come on, get different chants. It's not that hard. But anyways, continuing on here, we get a little bit of a backstage promo, I guess, from Becky Lynch, where obviously they're supposed to switch their championships tonight at the very end of SmackDown. And she says that instead of doing the switch, how about Becky Two Belts makes a comeback? And I mean, they just cut the camera, kind of just hinting, ooh, does Becky have something up her sleeve? And they do kind of play into that a little bit. So we will get there here in just a minute. There's only a few things left to talk about before we get to that. The next thing is Mustafa Ali versus Mansoor. This was a rematch from literally 24 hours ago, or maybe a little bit more. I don't really know how the time difference plays into effect with all this, but I know that they had a match on Thursday and they had a match on Friday, and Mansoor won both. This one was just with a roll-up, so I don't really know. Like I said, I didn't watch Crown Jewel, so I don't know how that one went. I do know that he won this one with a roll-up. Wasn't too exciting, but that does mean that Mansoor's beaten him twice in 2 days. I don't know what else Ali has left to prove. That this, whenever they were making their entrances, it was clear that this was like an intense match where they wanted to beat the hell out of each other, which kind of sucks because in a desperate tag team division, I felt like these two really could have been a good tag team together. It has nothing to do with like ethnicity or anything like that, but just their styles kind of meshing well together and then both being talented. I mean, I think that they cut the legs out from underneath this really a lot too soon. So hopefully, I mean, we saw the Hurt Business reunite with no explanation, even though and they had a way worse little breakup or whatever you want to call it than Mansoor and Ali. So I just wouldn't mind seeing Ali and Mansoor maybe get back in the tag team picture, because I mean, the division needs it. SmackDown for sure could use some more tag teams. I mean, Viking Raiders, that's really it that I know of for sure, other than the Usos and I guess the New Day over there. But I mean, it wouldn't hurt to have Mansoor and Ali kind of add a little bit, because I don't think that they have, as of right now, other single superstars to have like meaningful feuds with that are going to like take up, you know, valuable airtime on SmackDown. So I mean, you might as well just get in the tag team picture, but that is kind of like a death sentence these days, because tag teams just get split up, they get booked wrong, and it's just a nightmare. So as I say that, I might actually convince myself maybe that they shouldn't do that. But next on the show, we kind of get a little bit of like introductions from a lot of the people who were legitimately drafted to SmackDown who weren't SmackDown superstars before. There were a couple who made their appearance, like Mansoor and Ali, like we kind of mentioned, the New Day, Drew McIntyre. But then we get to see a little bit of like a segment promo type of introduction from Ridge Holland, which that was my first time actually seeing him, so it was a legitimate introduction. I am interested to see what he brings. I mean, he definitely caught my eye a little bit, so I'm going to touch back on that once I see a little bit more of him. Aaliyah, another NXT call-up. She's very talented. Garza and Humberto Carrillo, another tag team here on SmackDown. So maybe as I'm saying that, SmackDown might be all right in the tag team picture. We'll see, though, how things develop. And then Sheamus, someone who's been on SmackDown before, has bounced over to Raw. He's a seasoned veteran here in the WWE, so it's going to be nice having him. He will add stuff to the roster, and the more and more I think about it, the more content I am with what SmackDown has to work with here going forward. But I guess if there is something negative I'm going to say here, and I don't want this to seem like a negative show, especially here towards the back half, but I really wasn't a fan of this hit row stuff. Now, I'm going to be honest. This, like, I mean, I don't know. The segment, the way they came out, it just all seemed really corny to me. And I don't, like I said, if this is your thing, if you enjoy this type of stuff, that's awesome. You know, I'm not saying that it's wrong. But just the group itself, look at the track record. Do groups like this have a history of being successful, being anything more than like a flash in the pan? Now, their song was cool. I'll say that. I mean, their entrance is badass. But as far as like their ring work and stuff like that, it's not like they're not talented, but it's just not like, it doesn't catch me. Like, I don't know who it was, Adonis. One of the guys on the outside of the ring was like brushing his mustache and his eyebrows with a toothbrush. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't click with me. It's one of those things, like, and that's very important whenever it comes to wrestling fans. You have to click right away. Not necessarily like, ooh, I really like this guy, but it has to at least like be something that can engage you and like catch your attention as you're watching. And the whole time I was just like what the hell's going on here? But like I said, I do reserve the right to change my mind. I'm not extremely familiar with this team. I'm going to see them week after week. So things can change, you know, easily. I can become high on all these guys. I do know that Isaiah Swerve Scott, if I can get that out, might be, you know, the gem in this group. He might be the one, you know, the Montez Ford. When you're looking at all these collective superstars, who is going to be the one that actually makes something with themselves? I do think that it's probably going to be him. He's the one who I'm actually like, ooh, okay, SmackDown got Swerve. That's badass. Now, this whole shtick with Hit Row, I don't really know. I do feel it's like it's a little bit like a a ripoff of like Death Row Records from the 90s, you know, I don't know. It's just things like that. It just makes me feel like this group is extremely corny. I guess that's one way I can explain it. And like I said, I'm sorry if you're a fan of this. I'm not saying that like you're wrong or like this is just absolutely terrible, but I'm just saying that it's not for me right now. We'll see if it grows on me, but they got to stop with the corny stuff. I mean, you're not a musical band, you know, you're not a rap group. You're a wrestling group. So you got to maybe, you know, back up your entrances and all that stuff that you do after the match. That's really flashy and cool. You know, you got to do stuff like that in between the bells. And they did that. They squashed. I don't even know the names of these guys who they had a match with. I could pull it up really quickly, though. They had a match, and it was Swerve Scott and Top Dollar versus Dustin Lawyer and Daniel Williams, a couple local enhancement talent that were just going to get squashed. You know, as soon as you've seen these guys' names, you're like, yeah, this is going to be, what, a 10-second match? And that's pretty much all it was. It was a squash. So, like I said, I'm not saying right away, fire these guys, get them off the show, switch up what they're doing, but I'm just going to be honest. If they continue to do this and it doesn't click with me, I am not going to be a fan of this. So I guess we'll see. I'm definitely not going to completely rule it out. Like I said, I reserve the right to change my mind. So we'll see how things transpire here in the coming weeks. But up next, we get the last match of the show. It is Shinsuke Nakamura versus Happy Corbin. And this is actually like a decently long match, longer than what I expected, just given how the other matches throughout the night kind of ended up. But, you know, they're kind of going back and forth. It's not really, you know, anything that we haven't seen. Keep in mind, these guys just had a little bit of a feud for that crown that, you know, that was going on, you know, for a big chunk of the summer. So we have seen these guys go at it before. And this one kind of goes off the rails whenever Rick Boogs is on the outside of the ring playing Shinsuke's Nakamura or Shinsuke's theme song. Whenever he's in the middle of the match, like he's playing his guitar, like literally during the middle of the match, Madcap Moss must not be a fan of that because he walks over there, grabs his guitar, and those two guys have a little bit of like a stare down. And then Shinsuke Nakamura is supposed to do like a baseball slide underneath the bottom rope. He does botch it. Madcap Moss still sells it, which is one of the things that like is, it's almost worse. You know, if you mess up, you want to mess up going 100 miles an hour. I get that. But if somebody botches it, like a kick that bad, and you go back and watch it, it's pretty obvious if you really pay attention there. But if somebody botches something like that, you have to like switch on the fly. You know, you don't just fall as if they just kicked you coming at you like 25 miles an hour whenever they barely made contact, you know. So it's just kind of one thing I wrote down here. Definitely want to be able to adjust on the fly whenever things don't go like you expect. So, and Madcap Moss isn't somebody who I like have extremely high expectations for, but something that noticeable, it's sloppy to see. You don't want to see that, especially if it's like that easily noticeable. But because of all that stuff, like a brawl breaks out at the outside of the ring, but nothing happens in terms of disqualifications because the two legal competitors were fighting each other, and then the two people who were in their corners were fighting each other as well. So Shinsuke and Happy Corbin end up making their way back into the ring. Immediately, Shinsuke is met with an end of days, and that is the end of his days because he does fall to the, you know, the 1-2-3. Happy Corbin ends up getting the win, and they can continue being happy, I guess. But let's see here. Now, next, all we have left is the Women's Championship Exchange. And this was, you know, advertised as they were supposed to swap belts, do what the tag team wrestlers did a couple years ago, maybe last year, whenever they switched their belts. We all know the story. But because this was booked at the main event and it actually had its own segment, you knew there was going to be some type of stuff that happened here. And this was actually kind of real, in my opinion. This felt like a little bit of a shoot, at least from Becky and Charlotte's perspective, before Sasha Banks ended up coming out. Because Becky clearly wants to hold up both belts. Like, she wants to do the whole two belts thing. So as they're trying to, like, you know, switch belts, she's kind of trying to, you know, do that, like, that little snake version where, you know, like, hand me yours first and then I'll hand you mine. And you could tell she was trying to, you know, just hold up both belts. And then she ends up just trying to grab Charlotte's out of her hand. Charlotte throws hers on the ground so she couldn't grab it. I mean, clearly you wouldn't write this, you know, that this isn't something that the WWE creative had like told them, hey, all right, this is what you do. You're going to try to just make it seem like you're trying to grab the belt, but you don't give her the belt, and then you go try to grab it from her, and then you throw it on the ground. Like, that, you don't write that. If somebody wrote that and handed it to Vince McMahon, he'd probably smack him right in the mouth. So it just, I don't feel like that's how it was supposed to go. They kind of just, they had a little bit of a shoot there because Becky was trying to get one up on Charlotte. Charlotte's not going to let that happen. I feel like more often than not, she kind of goes off on her own in terms of like the script and stuff. Just what she says doesn't feel scripted. And she's been like that since he's come back in this heel role. And I'm really looking forward to having her on SmackDown. But after they do finally end up switching, Sonya Deville doesn't let any of that nonsense happen with Becky trying to do that and all that. But I will say, she does throw her championship, Becky that is, she throws her championship at Charlotte's midsection. And that's when Charlotte says, look, you want to be Becky Two Belts so bad, why don't we have a match right now, winner take all? And before Becky could even respond, we hear Sasha Banks' music, right? Like, she was even involved in this. But she comes out, and then Charlotte says, oh, did you feel left out? You had to come out? I mean, it's funny that Charlotte takes shots like that, because it does, like, as I mean, it might be scripted. It might be like, oh, we're supposed to say that. But the way she's saying it, like her tone, her delivery, it just feels like that's real, and it's almost like a legitimate shot at wrestlers like Sasha Banks and Becky, who kind of just always come out in moments like this. But anyways, Sasha does come out, and things get interesting between her and Charlotte, because they kind of go back and forth taking verbal shots at each other. Sasha ends up calling her the B word. So, I mean, that's kind of, you know, kind of sets it off there. Charlotte makes a joke like, hey, this is a PG show. That's not very nice of you to say. Pretty funny. I do love this version of Charlotte. And they kind of eventually start, things get physical after Sasha takes a shot and punches Charlotte. They kind of go back and forth, just, you know, trading punches with each other. But Charlotte evades the backstabber and kind of runs up the ramp. I'm going to get a little bit of a face off. And that's that. That's kind of how SmackDown goes off the air. But, I mean, one thing we could look forward to is clearly we're getting a Sasha versus Charlotte program going forward, likely going to end on a SmackDown. We're probably going to get a championship match on free TV between now and the Survivor Series so we can crown an official SmackDown Women's Champion. I know we already have one. It's clearly Charlotte. She is the undisputed champion. But Becky said it herself as she left, I'll see one of you two at Survivor Series. So clearly that we're going to have a match. They wouldn't have set this up. You can't have a program between Charlotte and Becky because they're on different brands. So you have to do something with Charlotte on SmackDown to get her to Survivor Series. And I think that Sasha is more than capable of being a good dancing partner for her. So that does do it for me here on the SmackDown review, guys. I hope that you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully I did better than last week. I do feel like I did a little bit better. I mean, had my fastball. I am a year older technically. So, I mean, maybe that has a little bit to do with it, but I do want to once again, thank you guys for tuning in here. I greatly appreciate it. If you want to do it next week, I will be back covering next week's SmackDown. And there's also going to be about five or six, I'm not really sure how many shows in between now and then, with a plethora of other co-hosts. So you are going to get your fix here if you're a fan of wrestling here on the WWE podcast. So I hope that you will stay here and enjoy what you have coming. Patreon's definitely the way to do it. I mean, ads aren't terrible, but if you can go without them for a cheap price of $1 a month, as well as all the other benefits, why not jump on that? So I definitely would advise you to do that. But like usual, guys, I hope you guys all have a fantastic weekend, a good week. Up until the next time I talk to you, walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.